It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about Windows Advanced Threat Protection. Now for everyone, lots more Windows news, including an update on Redstone 4, the next version of Windows. We're getting close to release. And Build, it's overlapping with Google I.O. What does that mean? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 557, recorded Wednesday, February 14th, 2018. White chocolate. Windows Weekly is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/WW and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where Paul Thurrott celebrates Valentine's Day and Mary Jo Foley just shakes her head and
Mary Jo just makes cat memes on Twitter all day.
No, she doesn't. Actually, maybe she does. I don't know. Sriracha has softened her heart, hasn't he? This is the show where we cover the latest from Microsoft. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Hello, boy and girl.
Hello, Leo.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks.
We're not celebrating.
Same to you.
Not celebrating. We're not celebrating. Somebody in the chat room.
I tweeted a little celebration.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Let me go see. I don't normally seek out the Twitter these days.
No, but I made a nice one.
Well, that's good.
Let me go pop see. The balloon here.
Is it Mary Jo?
You almost did it. Yeah, at Mary Jo Foley, all one word.
I follow you. I just don't. You know, people like Thurrott.
You have a lot of people following you and followers. So
yeah, I do. So the bots, Russian bots, trying to sway my vote, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Oh, there's Sriracha. Roses are red. Violets are blue. Come for the cats. Stay for the gong. On Windows Weekly at 2. Oh, you made a rhyme.
You forgot the line. This is not a haiku.
This is not a haiku.
Which would have been a nice ending, you know.
That would have been great.
What a sweet kitty. Is he? He is just the devil, isn't he? He is just waiting.
You should see him right now. He looks like he is going to be the devil.
Oh, he's just, yep. But he does it with love. He does it with love.
Guess.
Yeah, he does it because he cares.
He does it with a jealousy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, love, jealousy, what the hell? Yeah. Well, hello.
Hello.
Oh, fans' eyes for the Family Guy.
Cleo, if you've not seen this, this is going to be the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Another tweet?
Man, you're going to have to show this on the video, though.
The memes come fast and furious. All right, and a link. Let's see here. A fan's eye for the Windows Guy. It says, so I have some free time this Sunday. You decided to mash up Windows Weekly with Family Guy. Does it make any sense? Nah. Am I only one who thinks Paul sounds like Joe the cop and BD Sams as Stewie? Let's play the audio.
Xbox One, in many ways, is like Windows 8. It's a transitionary product.
I mean, I have a couple of thoughts. First of all, I was kind of excited, although Nilay Patel wrote, I think, a good article in The Verge saying, you know, this pass-through thing was tried already with Google TV.
Hey, so let me describe it, because I've talked to a few different people. Interesting thing is Dave Cutler did a big part of it.
That is so amazing. I want the whole episode.
I know.
So if you're listening, it didn't sound like anything special, but Justin synced it up to Family Guy. And you, Paul, are Joe the cop. You sound a lot like Joe the cop. I'm sad to say he made me Brian.
Isn't he Putty? That's the guy, right?
I think he's Putty.
Like, yeah, I think he's Putty.
And he has that Putty sound, as you do as well. And I'm Brian. And if I'd known that you were going to make
Brian's
me Brian, I could have made him sound more like
Cool Whip. Oh, no, that's Stewie, yeah, no, that's baby. Stewie.
Cool Whip. What did you just say?
Cool Whip. Cool Whip. And you're, I don't know who you are. You're a waitress, Mary Jo. I don't recognize that.
That's
that.
I think that's Joe's wife.
Oh,
that's
Meg? His wife. Is that her Meg? Name?
No, it's
no,
not
no,
Meg.
No, Meg's the daughter.
No.
No, it's not. No,
I believe that's Joe the cop's wife.
All right. You know too much about the Family Guy, Paul, and we now know.
He does.
I love the Family Guy. I know I'm the only one.
Yeah.
That's Bonnie. No? Okay, that's Bonnie, everybody says.
Bonnie.
Veruna says, come on, that's Bonnie. Everybody knows Bonnie. Joe, by the way, or Justin, the guy who did it, apparently sells retro stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Does a podcast on retro stuff. Justin sells.
Yeah, actually, so I met him last year. He came to my house and picked up a bunch of retro gaming machines.
Oh, I wish I'd known. I would love to find somebody willing to take my garbage.
It would have been easier this year. He actually lives in Pennsylvania, so
wow.
Unfortunately, he did this before I drove. But
I had a Leo's garage sale at the studio. My garage sale is unique. I don't have a price. It's all free. Take what you want. And I just put up. I clean out my office, which I think I mentioned this before. I rarely do. So there was a lot of old gear that I'd given up on.
Sure.
And people very much appreciated it. There were even laptops in there and stuff. Nothing that old, because I, you know, if you do this regularly. Well, thank you, Joe. That was, or Justin, I'm sorry. What the hell's going on over there? Is that you, Mary?
Can you hear the background sound here?
What is that?
Yeah,
are you in a cafe today?
No, there's like a truck out front collecting trash that is just parked out there collecting trash.
Bring us your trash, everybody. Trash here. Bring us your trash.
Well, I don't know why, but yeah.
It's funny because on Tuesdays with Security Now, for some reason, the trash guy always comes in the middle of it. So, Steve, you hear, anyway, we'll live with it. It's fine. I mention it only so the people at home don't think there's a trash guy outside their window.
Yeah.
So they have decided to move Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection downstream. Yes?
Yes.
That's good news. In fact, So what's the difference between Defender and Advanced Threat Protection?
That's a good question.
Yep. So Defender Advanced Threat Protection is something Microsoft introduced with Windows 10 Enterprise. And it's not the same as Defender, which is the antivirus service that's in Windows. So it's a post-breach service. So if some bad things have happened to you and it's made it past your other defenses, it'll investigate the breaches and give you suggested responses.
Well, this is as opposed to the malicious software removal tool, which is also post-breach. And I want to just add, I'm a post-breach baby. So it all, comes together. Feeling an identity.
Beginning of a Stephen Wright show.
I know. So you've been impacted. So how is this different from the malicious software removal tool?
That's something that where you get updates to virus definitions, right? Every day, pretty much.
But it removes infections that you have.
This does not. This tells you like, hey, this is what's going on with your network of machines. Gives you some ideas of, hey, this is what we would do if we, Microsoft, were running your network.
I don't want to give you any suggestions.
We're going to shut it down. That's
if
all
it
we're
were
saying.
Me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Right. And so as of the Fall Creators Update, they started talking about Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection as more than just this one tool. They started saying it was a family of tools. So Device Guard and Antivirus and Application Guard, all those things fall under this heading of Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. But what made this really interesting, and people were kind of two minds about this when it got announced this week, some people were like, I can't believe they did this because Windows 7 isn't going to be supported after 2020.
Right.
So why are they doing this? A lot of people thought Windows Defender ATP was like a carrot to get people to upgrade to 10. Like, well, you can't have it unless you have Windows 10. Mm. But I think they did the right thing because, as we all know, over about 50% of all Windows users right now are still running Windows 7. And so by not covering that with ATP, they were basically telling enterprises, We don't care if you're vulnerable. We just want you to go to Windows 10. So now if you have Windows 8.1 or Windows 7 with Service Pack 1, and you're an enterprise who also has Windows 10 Enterprise in the mix, you'll be able to take advantage of this service. I think they did the right thing. Other people
They clearly did. Right?
In fact,
but
really,
I saw some people saying, no, no, they shouldn't have done this.
It begs the question, why not just put all of their protections in all versions of Windows? Doesn't everybody deserve to be safe?
No. And no, I mean, no, I think they need to have the posture that they want people to move to Windows 10 because they do. But I think they also ultimately have to do what their customers need, which they do. And I think they deserve a little bit of credit for that. I mean, they're trying to push us in the right direction as they see it. Us, you know, collectively, I guess, you know, businesses especially. But they do show a surprising amount of flexibility when push comes to shove. You know, we've seen that in the schedules being expanded for support, right, from 18 months to 2 years on different Windows 10 versions. And it gives me great hope that they could make a couple of small changes, I think, to Windows 10S or whatever we're calling it this year that I think would put it over the top, you know. So it's absolutely the right thing to do.
It is.
Is the concern that normal users might be terrified by whatever they see and it might not be helpful to them? I mean,
no, I think the people who are saying, I don't think they should have done it, were more saying, we want people to go to Windows 10 and we want them to
everybody. Nothing to see here. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, this also begs the question. A lot of people asked me when this came out. So does this mean Microsoft's going to extend support for Windows 7 past January 2020? Like, is this the hint that this is going to come? And they have been very adamant in saying, we learned our lesson with XP and we're not going to do that. We're not going to extend it past the date. But, you know, if you're an enterprise, but I know 50% of people are still running it. And if you're an enterprise and you're willing to pay Microsoft for a custom support contract like people did with XP, I could see them extending it. I don't know that they're going to. I don't know that they're not going to. They publicly have said they are not.
So here's a guess, and it's just based on that history that you just alluded to, which is that with Windows XP, and more than once, I think three times, they extended the life cycle, support life cycle of that product. And there were reasons for it, whatever. But they did it for everybody, you know, and they did it for free. And I think that might have been – I think that's what they're looking at now and saying, okay, look, I mean, realistically, 2 years are going to go by or whatever it is, 15 months, and – enterprises are not going to be ready. So how do we handle that? Mm-hmm. They already have a system in place that Mary Jo mentioned where enterprises can pay past the support life cycle to continue getting support, meaning, you know, bug fixes, security fixes, whatever. They could lower the price of that, you know. They could also just do a temporary 6 month or whatever the time frame is, free extension. And I have a hard time believing we're not going to see one of those two things or both of those things. I don't think they're going to do it free for everybody.
No.
Right? Like they did with XP. I think that's the key learning there, that maybe they shouldn't have made it so easy. But it's just inconceivable that they won't extend it in some way. Not for as much time, right? And again, not for free. But they have to. They have to.
It'll be interesting to see. Because right now we're starting to see the beginning of Microsoft really, may I say, banging the gong? Banging the gong for the end of support for Windows 7, right? Like, this is the start. The next 2 years, and especially next year, you are going to hear them talk about this all the time, right? It's like, hey, guys, 2 years. It sounds like a lot of time. It's not that far, especially if you're an enterprise, right? And you've got to do a lot of planning to get your 30,000 users off of Windows 7 by January 2020.
What are we at here? Is this the year three? In other words, this summer, are we hitting the third anniversary of Windows 10, the release, the initial release, right?
2012, was it? No.
No,
that was Windows 8.
So it must have been 2015. So, that means that by the time Windows 7 exits its support lifecycle, it will be under 5 years. That's actually a pretty short period of time for a version of Windows that's two versions back, right? And part of it has to do with just the way that Windows 10 is supported, et cetera. But I just have a hard time given the speed at which enterprises upgrade.
Just the enterprise version of 7, or is this all versions of 7?
Expiring in 2020. It's all, right?
It's all versions. But I guess what I'm saying is
all versions of Windows 7.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's a big enough consumer base, too, that that could be a concern as well. The issue there is that those guys don't have much of a voice.
Right.
You know, even though there are going to be some hundred something million, whatever the number is, of, you know, just people on Windows 7, I don't think that they have a way to voice this concern to Microsoft in a way that would make sense, right, as a group. Mm-hmm. Whereas the enterprise obviously does.
Right. Right. Yeah, so it's going to, I'm really interested to see what happens as we get closer to the end of support date of 7 and how Microsoft reacts. You know, with the patches, I mean, the custom support contracts with XP, they don't like to publicize that that was a thing that was available, right? And they used to say the cost is exorbitant. It's only for huge enterprises that are in the midst of moving to the next version. Like, this is not something you want to do. And then I remember I wrote an article maybe 2 years after they started offering the custom support contract saying they're secretly making deals with people and doing it way cheaper than you think.
I think the deal, not the financial deal, but the arrangement they have is you're supposed to demonstrate that you are in fact working towards upgrading, right?
You are, right.
Even what the way they described this availability of the Defender product on 7 had that language in it, right?
It did.
We understand that our customers are in the process of migrating, but this is a difficult and time-consuming process in some cases. And, you know, we want to be flexible, blah, blah, whatever it is. But, you know, there's always this implicit or even explicit promise on the part of the customer that, we're upgrading. We're just it's taking a little longer than we thought. Mostly because only Bob there in the corner has installed Windows 10 and we're not really ready. So I wonder if they... I don't know how you would enforce it, but it seems like from Microsoft's part, they would want to have that assurance that you're not just doing this as a stalling tactic. You know,
are in fact up. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. But this, by the way, this happens this summer. I didn't make that clear. It's not going to be available as a preview for Windows 7 and 8.1 until the spring at some point. And then this summer is when this will be available. So it's not actually out yet. This is just them telling you, hey, we're going to bring it.
Oh, we're going to bring it.
We're going to bring it, guys.
I feel this is actually kind of refreshing because so many companies, you know, Apple's lately been accused of shenanigans to encourage people to move up, you know, to upgrade their operating system. I think it's refreshing if a company says, hey, you're not upgrading. We'd love you to upgrade. Lots of reasons to upgrade. But since many don't, we really ought to make sure that our – you know, existing installed base is well supported. I think that's good.
Same.
And especially since it protects the internet. It's not just the users.
Right.
That's why I wish they kept doing updates for XP because there's still many XP boxes out there. It's not just.
Oh, boy, though. Yeah, I mean,
once in a while.
Yeah, they do when they need to.
It's a tough one because if that was the official policy, there would still be tens and tens of millions of people running XP.
There are there are tens of millions of people running XP. That's the point.
What?
And they're out there. I know. And they're out there and they're unprotected and they're more importantly infecting the rest of the net. I think that you can, I don't know. I think that's a bad policy to kind of encourage people by saying, well, we're just going to, I mean, I understand on the other hand that they can't support everything forever. But this isn't about support, I guess. This is about extending benefits to all Windows users. All Windows users matter.
They do.
That's all I'm saying.
They do.
More Windows news. Windows analytic tools for Enterprise now give you a patch analyzer for Speltdown.
Speltdown. I like that.
We're trying to come up with a name on security Speltdown. Noun for Spectre Meltdown. Yeah.
This is fear as a service, isn't it? You know, anytime there's seriously, like, and I don't mean, and I know that sounds cynical.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Anytime there's something scary happening in the world, you can sell the thing that fixes the problem. And it seems like Spectre and Meltdown detection has become a big feature of a lot of different things all of a sudden, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, guys, we got this thing over here. It's called Windows Analytics. Guess what? We just added to it. Right. You know, like, cool.
I think it's good, though. Is another they did the right thing kind of thing. So Windows Analytics Service is getting these new tools that will be in there for free. So it, there's three things it'll do. One is it'll tell you if the antivirus software that you have on your machine is compatible or not compatible with the latest Windows update. Then it will give you the status of your operating system in terms of security. It'll tell you if any of the updates have been disabled. You can choose if you're an IT admin to disable the fix if that's the way you want to go. And then it'll also give you the firmware status, right? So Microsoft's going to be adding to this database. It'll show which firmware patches are available from Intel and if your machine has been patched or are the patches available. So I think it's good.
It is good.
Doing the right thing, right?
It's kind of it's a little bit of security theater in the sense that we're responding to something that happened in the past. And when you look at it, it's sort of like, you know, if this was so important, why weren't we monitoring this stuff already? You know, but I think the big wake up call here is that Microsoft years and years ago, when Microsoft first came out with Windows Update and Microsoft Update, which remember it was used to be sort of like a web service, not the thing that was in Windows. The promise then was that we were going to start getting our updates from PC makers through that system. And of course, today we do get some of them and Surface owners get all of them. But I think the big issue we have in the, one of the big issues we have in the PC world today is that we have all these avenues for updating things. Yeah. And in the case of drivers and firmware updates and stuff like that, it seems like the right way to get that stuff onto computers is through Windows Update. It seems like we need that central one place for everything kind of thing. So I hope that the industry collectively is going to figure that out and do the right thing there as well. Like this kind of nonsense in some ways shouldn't ever be necessary. Like we should never have to worry about this stuff. And the fact that we're talking about it every week now is kind of an indication that, you know, retroactively we're realizing it wasn't right to begin with.
There's still spelt down patches and yesterday's.
You really try to push this term.
Yeah, no.
I like spelt down.
There's still.
What did you say? Cool whip?
Cool whip. What is it? Say it again. Because this patch Tuesday patch, yesterday's patch had still had spelt down fixes in it. I mean, we're not done.
Well, I mean, Intel shipped a new set of those firmware updates for or BIOS updates, whatever you want to call them, for the CPUs, but only for one generation, right? And so we're going to be seeing over the next days, weeks, whatever, more of that stuff. And then months are going to go by and we're going to see updates to them because that's the way this is going to go.
Yeah.
We are going to be updating forever. That's why I use a Windows.
Yeah. Big Outlook patch, too, that you definitely want to apply.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a nasty bug in Outlook. Okay, let's see here. Microsoft is still adding features to Redstone 4. Every time you say Redstone, I think of a rocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or how about curling? Did you guys watch curling on the Olympics?
I found
curling. So did you notice they're calling those red stones?
Oh, I didn't. Oh, interesting. I did. Maybe that's where they come from. They're granite, and they're not really red.
No.
I guess there's red and yellow.
There's the red and yellow.
That's right. Each team has its own color. Oh, yeah. So those are the red stones and the yellow stones. Maybe that's next. I actually enjoyed curling. Mary Jo got a TV. Now she's watching curling on the Olympics.
Look at me.
Yeah, wait a minute. How did this happen? How on earth did you watch curling? I didn't even catch that.
It was good.
It was last night. There was curling.
It's the biggest sport
in
Canada.
Were you in your house or were you in a bar?
I was in my house.
You were in your house watching your own TV.
It's soothing.
I'm not saying you're lying.
Sriracha likes curling,
Paul. I'm just trying to understand.
He did. He slept while curling was on.
Was it on the TV or was it on like a computer?
TV.
It's on the TV, Paul. Right before Shaun White's amazing run, it was... it's flippity-doo.
At the ripe old age of 30 or whatever.
Yeah, he's so old. 31. Oh, my God. How can he be competing at...
If I fell doing what he does, I would explode into a million tiny bone fragments. I would be literally a bag of bones.
I know. So what's new in Redstone 4?
Okay, so this to me is kind of surprising that they're still adding features because we should be getting close to the thing we're not supposed to call RTM. Which is RTM.
I mean, it's February.
I know. And this next build is 1803, which means RTM is in March, right? So last week, right after Windows Weekly was over, they rolled out another insider preview, 17093, to the PC testers. And, you know, there was nothing earth-shatteringly huge in there. There was some more stuff around that new telemetry data utility that they're adding. So there's going to be actually a button for deleting the diagnostic data that Microsoft's collecting. That is in this build. There's some changes around wording. So there's a new page under update and security that used to be called Windows Defender, now called Windows Security. A game bar makeover, guys. A game bar makeover. Better Bluetooth device pairing. Yay. So like lots of little things like that. Oh, and Windows 10S can use the Authenticator app so that you don't have to use passwords. Lots of Windows subsystem for Linux tweaks in this build, including the ability to communicate between Windows subsystem for Linux and Windows apps over Unix sockets. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't think they'd still be adding features at this point. You know, they just had their bug bash. They're in the midst of kind of...
We'd still be talking about sockets in 2018 either, but here we are.
Sockets. There you go.
It has to have sockets.
Yeah, so there's lots of new things in last week's build. I don't know when we're going to see the first Redstone 5 build, but they've been hinting it's soon. We're getting
skip ahead.
If you're in skip ahead, you may see a Redstone 5 build soon. I don't think this week. I think that's a little too soon. But
speaking of which, I think it was Brandon LeBlanc, but it could have been someone else, confirmed on Twitter that the Cloud Clipboard feature will not be coming to RS4.
Yeah. It's not even in the build, is it?
No.
Or is it?
No. But they just announced a bunch of new features. I mean, you could almost imagine them throwing it into the last second. Surprise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess that's like... Yeah. But it's getting there, getting closer. And you know what? We still don't know what they're going to call it either. They're still calling it Redstone 4. We're still calling it Redstone 4.
What's going on?
The hint is Spring Creators Update, which I really wish they would not do because...
So people are freaking about that, but honestly, it's
going to
no
be so confusing.
Good or bad than Fall Creators Update. Well, what's the difference?
I don't know. The first Creators Update came out last spring, right? Which I sometimes accidentally call the Spring Creators Update. Maybe it's just me.
The only issue I have with it is that fall's going to come around again and then spring again, and they're going to have to come up with new names.
I know.
They can't call it Spring Up, you know, Creators Update 2. You know, in 2019.
Yep.
Time for
how about 1803?
This is what we've been lobbying for. Yeah.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I know. There is a lot of angst over the name. Like people get really wound up about this on Twitter, especially.
Now, this next item, I don't think it's something Mary Jo would say. So I'm going to guess this is a Paul thing saying that somehow Microsoft should ape Apple.
Yeah. Well, God, you've made a career out of copying Apple. Let's do it to this.
Fact that Apple has said, or it's rumored. I don't think Apple said anything, but it's...
No, Apple never
said. It's well documented that Craig Federighi pulled aside the iOS team, had an offsite, and said, look, guys, it's time to make sure this is all working.
Yes. What a concept.
Yeah. So we're going to not add a bunch of new features in iOS 12 or whatever it's called, but we are going to focus on reliability.
They're going to give the product teams the ability to punt it to the next release after that if they need more time.
And we've actually seen them do this with Mac OS a few times. High Sierra is supposedly not a big feature upgrade, only a stability and performance improvement.
Yeah, actually, if you were to go back to when that was released, I probably wrote something along those lines for that as well. Like, you should look at this, Microsoft. Well, this is a good idea.
Microsoft may not announce it, but don't they do similar kind of, you know, things? No.
No, every one of these releases is major. And Mary Jo has argued for an R2 release. I've just sort of said in the past, like, look, mobile OSs, which are more modern and simpler than a legacy spaghetti code kind of thing like Windows, are updated once a year with major feature updates. Obviously, iOS gets little features from time to time for a little while, and then they do bug fixes. Why would something that's more complex, has been around longer, is not in as much need of updating, require two major feature updates every year. It doesn't make sense. So Mary Jo's kind of middle path there is, well, look, okay, you can do two, but, you know, make one of them like an R2 release, like they used to do for server. You might have a couple of features, but most of it is about fine tuning and quality control and that kind of thing. And I like that idea, but I, you know, the more I think about it, why don't you just not update it twice a year? I mean, I don't understand why we need that. It just doesn't make any sense. Obviously, they release bug fixes, security fixes every month.
Do you remember there was a point when it was going to be three updates a year?
Yeah, that's insanity.
Yeah, right. So be happy with two.
Our arch nemesis, former Microsoft guy, once opined that every 3 years sounds about right for new Windows versions. And it's interesting, as Microsoft extends the support policy for each Windows 10 version from 18 months to now to 2 years, and I think they're going to keep going, we're going to get back to 3 years in a way. You know, if you think about it, that's just for product support. But this three-year cycle, in some ways, for a mature product like Windows, it might still make sense. You know, it's weird. I know Microsoft wants to pretend it's an online service and everything. It's not. And it's we're reaching kind of a weird breaking point with it. So anyway, Apple is allegedly scaling back the pace of development. I think that's fine. I think Microsoft should do it too. It's a simple concept. I just think we're being overrun with all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't see them doing it though. You know, like... Yeah. Who was it who did this today? I think it was The Walking Cat. He posted a list from the SDK of all the different, they're not additions or SKUs, but I think they're the new versions of the shells that are coming. And there's more than ever. I mean, I think things are just going to keep going fast. And
so that's a slightly different topic, but it's the same topic. I mean, but I was thinking kind of beyond that, related to that. When I saw the SDK release, I was thinking to myself, you know, are there any major examples of anyone using this stuff? You know, is it really exciting when a new version of the Windows SDK comes out? Do you go through the code and look for all the new stuff and see what you can target on that latest version? but do they? I mean, I know some people do. I don't mean literally, but is this actually a major endeavor somewhere? A really important big thing? I don't know. I feel like those days are long, long past.
Yeah. I think for some developers, it's still a big deal, especially if you're trying to target some of the newer scenarios like mixed reality and augmented reality, these new Andromeda devices. I know there are people who are. There's not a ton of people who are.
I'm sure there are. Right. But that was my point. Like, I don't really...
Yeah, there's not as many.
I don't know. A new version of Android comes out might have the same impact because so few people are going to be on that new version. It almost doesn't make sense to worry about the new stuff. New version of iOS comes out. It makes tons of sense because that whole user base is moving to that thing en masse within the year. There's no doubt about it. I just don't see it on Windows. And I guess I don't see it on Google either, on Android.
What about pistachio ice cream?
Wow, what's that? That sounds good. I'll take two of those.
Isn't that the next Android?
Is it?
Internally.
Android P.
But is it pistachio?
Well, they always have a name internally, but then they often change.
It better be
peanut butter cup. That's God's perfect perfection.
I saw some people saying it was pistachio, being called inside of Google pistachio ice cream. I don't know anything about that. I'm not all about Android.
No, guys. This is not all about Android. No, sir.
It could be.
Should we change it now that you're both Android users?
Yeah.
Android is a dumpster fire, Leo. You know, I hate myself every day that I turn this thing on.
But you have choice, Paul.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so horrible. Come on.
No, it's fine. Paul's just being
I've only found one app. That is actually better on Android than it is on iOS. Only one.
What's that?
And the rest of it is way better on iOS in many cases.
Snapchat? Is that the app?
Oh, no. It's Calm. It's a meditation
kind
of thing.
Calm.
Yeah. So if you actually look at that app side by side, the Android version is actually better.
Huh.
Yeah. It's a weird outlier.
Huh. So... We were talking about the build rumor last week and then saying, no, that's not right because it would overlap with Google I.O. Well, it's going to overlap with Google I.O.
I know.
Yep.
Yes,
it I'm kind of surprised they did that. Are you?
Well, it only overlaps one day.
I don't think they had a choice.
When Google picked the date for I/O and announced it, I thought, okay, now Microsoft was rumored to pick that same week, but I was like, oh, maybe they're going to delay it a week.
Oh, no, they had picked this a long time ago. That's the problem. I don't know why they sat on it for so long.
Yeah.
But once Google announced it, or if they caught wind of it early, who knows? But you have to think they went to the venue and said, hey, guys, what's the schedule look like? And they couldn't change it.
Yeah.
It must be a titanic task.
I wonder if that would count as collusion if they called and said, let's set our dates so that they don't overlap.
But it's just pragmatic. In other words,
collusion. That's not an antitrust issue.
No, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. I didn't mean anything like that. I just meant that it would be better for Microsoft if they weren't on the same date. And I have to think that someone made an effort to change it and that they couldn't do it.
Mm. Well, so there's two groups that this impacts. One is developers, especially people who would like to use maybe progressive web apps, which are both Microsoft and Google things, or perhaps people who would like to, I don't know, develop Microsoft. I don't know. There are people in both worlds, I would
there
guess.
There are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to be in Seattle for a couple of days and then leave? Quickly fly down?
Go to Mountain View? It's not impossible.
It's not impossible, but come on.
There's lots of flights. Seattle to San Jose.
They're going to have to divide resources up. They could send one group of people to one.
So that's that's one group. The other group is press. And somebody in the chat room said, you know, that's bad because Google's going to steal all your thunder, but they're not overlapping completely. They're just
honestly, when it comes to press, I have an old saying, which is "F those guys." Who cares?
Screw them.
You should make life as uncomfortable as you can on those entitled little jerks.
They can cover both too, because really, all the big announcements are day one, right? Generally, So the first day of build is 7th, 8th, and 9th. Google I/O starts the 9th. So there's only one day of overlap.
Okay.
Oh, I thought Google I/O started the 8th. No.
Oh, does it? Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
I thought there was one day. But look, most people aren't going to go to either show anyway. So you can watch the day one festivities from home.
Oh, you're right. May 8th it begins. Yeah. So it's a two-day overlap. Yeah. May 8th.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's not as good as – that is kind of bad. So there's – but at least Microsoft has one day in the sun before Google I/O.
Sure.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of collusion, and this is the good kind of collusion, one of the things I'm wondering about, I should say, is what if anything Microsoft will say about PWAs at Build, and that's something that Microsoft and Google actually do collaborate on, and that's kind of neat. And it wouldn't surprise me to see Microsoft show up at the Google show, and vice versa. And I'd like to see some kind of Microsoft tool chain, something. Let's bring .NET developers to the PWA world. Build would be the obvious time to make that happen. There's a two-way trip here, but Microsoft has always done a good job of taking its developers somewhere new. You know, Xamarin's a good example of that on mobile. I'm curious what the plan is, for PWA. So hopefully that will be part of it.
Here's my question. Which will be the first to have a rap group called Programmers with Attitude?
Yep.
I think there'll be people going to both.
I do too. I think there could be some people who go to both.
Tough trip, because I didn't realize there was a two-day overlap. That is Mary Jo, though. Overlap.
Wait a minute, hold on. Think about this. We could go to Seattle, rent like a convertible, drive to San Francisco.
Yeah. Top down.
Did you just say we?
Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense for me to do this by myself. I'm just saying.
It'd be fun. Man. I think it'd be fun. Road trip.
It is at the Seattle Convention Center again, where it was last year, which is
good.
By
the way,
I thought it was great. And that was someplace they used to have WinHack years ago, and it seemed like an antiquated kind of thing. And then we went back there, and I was like, actually, this place is great. It's nice.
Yep. They're hinting about some of the stuff they're going to announce. I don't know if you saw, they did a blog post on the Azure blog today about this, and they said spend 3 days exploring AI, mixed reality, cloud, data, and quantum. No word about Windows there. But, of course, there will be talk about Windows. I don't know how much they'll tell us about Redstone 5 there, or even Andromeda. Will they even bring up Andromeda? Not the hardware, but the actual shell thing that they're doing? I don't know.
I have a friend, I don't want to say where he is, but he's not near here, who works as a developer. And Microsoft came to his office to tell them about the new stuff that they're working on. Mm. And this is how he described it. He said, the demo was really cool. He used Visual Studio on a Mac. He made a microservice with a web UI and deployed it to a Docker container, which is a lightweight Linux thing. Apparently, the future of Microsoft is not Windows. It's like, yep, that's pretty much what we're dealing with over here in a nutshell. That's
But you remember, which build was it when they had 3 days of keynotes, I think, or 2 days, and the first day was all about Azure and data lakes.
They put Windows on day three or whatever to kind of make us sit around. It was a couple of years ago. That was unbelievable.
Yeah. That was kind of like, okay, I know you're trying to send a message here about what the future of the company is, but.
You know what, though? If they did that this year, people would still complain, but it might be a little more, I don't know, relevant to things, palatable. Honestly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know.
It might, right. It would be fewer complaining or fewer complaints.
Yeah. But that list is very telling, right? That's the stuff they talked about at Ignite. Also, the quantum stuff, right? Mixed reality, AI.
I need
AI,
my mind blown again, so data. I'm definitely going to be paying attention to the quantum stuff.
Right.
I think I can guarantee, based on my performance from last year, that I will not be invited to interview the quantum guys again.
You probably won't.
I think that's pretty much a lock.
I just turned them down. I just said, I can't even do an interview with you guys because I don't even have the most basic grasp.
You know, like when a deer gets trapped by a group of wolves and he's like getting really nervous because he can't see any way out. That's where I was in the press room when I had to go see those guys. And I was praying to God that somebody sitting there could help me understand what this was so I wouldn't look like a complete fool when I walked into this room. And everyone was like, oh, no. Nope. Yeah, you're in.
I remember you came back into the press room and I'm like, so can you explain quantum to me? And you're like, no.
Nope, like, okay. I cannot.
I'm like, after
I wrote
the meeting,
beginning of an article like everything you need to know about quantum computing. And then the first sentence says, is the article I would love to write. However, I have no idea what this is.
So, I'm sure there'll be more of that. Visual Studio tools for AI and all that kind of good stuff. I am curious, though, how much they will disclose about the next Windows at this. Because this is in May. It means the Spring Creators Update or whatever 1803 is called will already have rolled out or started to roll out.
They have to talk about the next Windows. But you know how they do it? This is so easy to fix. They got in a lot of trouble last year because they announced a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Literally said this is coming in the next version of Windows. And none of it did.
Yep.
So we called them on it, right? So now they're all burned and they're upset and everything. But all you have to do is say, hey, guys. We're working on this stuff. Here's the list. Yep. Not all of it will be in the next version. Some of it will be in the one after that. Some of it may never make it in. That's the process. Yep. We're testing Windows publicly.
Yeah. They did that with sets and timeline this time, but they didn't do it at a show. So
that's what you were calling for, though, Paul, with the that Microsoft should do that, like what Apple does, which is it's okay. Careful about announcing something. That's the problem.
You just frame it that way and it's fine. As long as you never said it was coming in a particular release, which is what they did do, you're good. In fact, you can just be explicit about it. We don't know when this is going to appear. Actually, we hope to have some of this in the next version, but
they may be implying that by using the name quantum, because then as soon as you observe it, it disappears.
Right. Just the fact that you know about it means it no longer exists.
Right.
Right.
I don't think that's what that is.
Quantum's
but
cat. Yeah, and as I said, I would go just to find out more about PWA at both. I would go to the PWA threat.
They've got to talk
really,
about that.
Really interested to see how that plays out.
Does Microsoft have a tool? I mean, I know they have Studio, but do they have a tool within Studio for this kind of development?
No, that's what I was asking for. So in other words, I think they will have to. Somebody asked on Twitter today about this kind of thing. Well, you know, what does Microsoft do? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, so today, you know, JavaScript is typically not written in a big, bulky IDE. You use something like Visual Studio Code or a standalone editor like Atom or whatever. And you write it to a web server and you test it and you do your thing. And it's kind of a different development process. So .NET development to date, and by .NET I mean Microsoft Stack development, really, typically has happened in Visual Studio. It's a kind of a different process. But Microsoft has done a good job historically bringing those guys to each new platform that they make, and also to things like mobile through Xamarin, right? There's a path. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm curious about is how Visual Studio adapts to handle PWAs, if at all, and if Microsoft provides a path forward for what I'm going to call .NET developers. You know, you could make PWAs on top of .NET Core or whatever, ASP.NET Core. You know, will they have that kind of stuff? Will they support multiple web backends natively? Yada yada yada. I don't know. I don't think they've ever spoken to this. So
no, they've got that PWA builder thing, right? But that's not
well. But the deal today is if you're going to create a PWA, maybe you have a website and you want to turn it into a PWA, or maybe you're starting from scratch. You're basically kind of hand coding something. You create this manifest file. You know hand code the entries in there. You advertise, you broadcast it as being available to the store, blah, 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 whatever. But it's not a, you know, Microsoft makes wizards. They make, you know, they allow you to write in C#, you know, or whatever. So,
yeah, well and their frameworks, I mean, it'd be a great, I mean, I imagine people will use React or something like React.js or something like that to do the.
Yes. Yeah, but they need to, they've got some millions
framework. They should have their own framework for this.
Microsoft supports something called hosted web apps. Is there going to be a wizard that will help you transition your hosted web app into a PWA? There should be. It seems like kind of an obvious thing. What if you used web technologies to create a UWP app? Is it possible that this thing could be transitioned to a PWA?
Almost like Rails. Ruby on Rails is what you set it up. It sets up a scaffolding for a minimal app, and it has everything you need.
Right.
I can imagine a Rails-like framework for PWAs.
Well, think about any project you might make in Visual Studio or in Xcode or in Android Studio. What kind of app do you want? Like, I want an app that has
a
menu and a, you know, whatever UI elements. And yeah, it creates that.
There should be a
basic
button that says I want to create a PWA. You're right. Yeah.
And maybe even different types of PWAs.
Right.
I want, you know, there has to be. Yeah, it sets up the scaffolding, as you said, for access to data, to offline access, to, you know, whatever the stuff is, to optimize the loading of the page so that it is as fast as it can be. You know, you can draw the page in different ways on a slow connection that can make a huge difference.
Yep. Mm. I myself have decided to use Emacs, Closure Script, Reagent, and React.js to create my
products. I have only one thing to say to that. You get it.
In the back. I do think, you know, I mean, it's a completely pipe dream, but this is the kind of thing that would have, you know, we spent a lot of money creating an app for Twit that we never released because it was so god-awful. And, you know, they used, you know, one of those, you know, unified code bases that you can do Android and iOS on and blah, blah, blah. Had we had to do all over again, making the Twit website a PWA would be just the obvious solution.
Yep. I think it is going to become the obvious solution for a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it's going to be big.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's a question of how Microsoft's going to support it. I mean, they have to support it. They're allowing these apps to come into the store. You know, you need a path for people who are familiar with the Microsoft stuff to have that same capability.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Surface, Xbox, and the back of the book, which includes beer on this show. The only show where we recommend alcoholic beverages. And I'm glad of it. They're not. They're only a little alcoholic. Our
just
show today,
a little.
Just a little
just
alcoholic.
A little.
It's like just a little drunk.
You're only a little pregnant.
A little pregnant. Our show today brought to you by this and this, the Ring family of apps. I am, as you know, all in on Ring. I've got my Ring doorbell. We're putting up the Ring spotlight cams now. This is really great. So I think probably a lot of you know, well, I'm going to start at the beginning. The Ring video doorbell. This is the new one, the Video Doorbell 2. You install this in lieu of where your doorbell is right now. It looks like a doorbell. In fact, they even have different finishes to match your house and all that. But it's a whole lot more. Sure, they push the button and it goes ding-dong in your house. But the Ring Video Doorbell also has a very good high-def wide-angle camera. Whoops, I opened it upside down. Let's do it the other way around. Good high-def camera. It also has a speaker, a microphone, and it pairs to your Wi-Fi. The back plates, you know. Oh, this is the new one. This is cool. This is great. So there's the slot for the battery and all that stuff. This is really, they've really updated this. I should replace my existing ring with a new one. This is really nice. It's a high-def camera, wide angle, captures the whole field of view. It also has a motion sensor in it. So somebody doesn't even have to ring your doorbell to have the Ring video doorbell notify you, whether you're at home or anywhere else on your smartphone. You probably heard during most of our shows now, it happens all the time. You hear that ding, 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 the doorbell going off because people are, you know, at my door and I have to forget to mute my phone. It's really handy. You could speak to them at your door. You can answer. I love the videos that Ring posts now. You can create a neighborhood watch by sharing the videos. These videos on the Ring Twitter feed, twitter.com/ring. Watch this one. This is hysterical. I got to go back to the beginning of this one. This is a guy comes. He's about to take a package. Okay. Guy who owns the Ring doorbell sees him, says,
"Hey, put that back. Put that back now."
Oh, sorry.
Put it back.
Sorry. I didn't mean to.
Cops right now on you.
She called the cops. And then the nice thing is the cops have a nice crystal clear video of a guy. It's so fun to watch these. Here's another. This is another fun one. So you could talk to people at your door. This one's from the floodlight cam. So the floodlight cam, as I mentioned, is just, you know, you probably already have these lights in your house. You just take them off, put this up. It has LED lights, very bright. They are motion sensitive, so they're activated. But it also has the camera, the speaker, the microphone, the motion sensor. This one has a 110 decibel alarm and a big light that goes off. Here's also from the Ring Twitter feed. This is a video of a guy captured on the floodlight cam. Let me just play this for you. He's going to break into the truck. So he's actually, I think he broke the glass. Yeah, he's reaching into the truck. Oh, it's, oh, my vid, my, yeah, he's climbing into the, that's the Ring alarm. Guy runs.
Get out of here, never come back.
The guy says, get out of here and never come back again. And nice video of the perp running off. You can take the video, share it with your neighborhood, so it's like a neighborhood watch. I think these things are a must have. The Ring video doorbell, the Ring spotlight cam. They also have the Ring stick up cam, which is everything but the doorbell. You can put that anywhere. It's solar powered, so you don't have to worry about getting power for it. Here's the deal. We got a Ring of Security kit. Got some special offers for you. Includes the Ring video doorbell. You get the, there's, I think, a couple of versions now, and this is the new one I have. You get your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams. I'd get them all the way around the house, whatever that's going to take. So you have, there's no angle I can't see around my house. And that's fantastic. And, you know everything that's going on. And you'll save up to $150 if you go to ring.com/WW, R-I-N-G, ring.com/WW. Not everything you catch on the Ring is bad. Here's a after the Super Bowl, apparently a Philadelphia Eagle waving at somebody to celebrate. ring.com/WW to save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. We thank Ring for their support. I'm pretty sure
that guy in the eagle thing is my neighbor.
Sometimes, you know, you catch all sorts of things, trick-or-treaters, you know, whatever. It's not always bad guys. He knows. He obviously knows. There's one in here where some kids are going to, yeah, here it is. The kids are going to break into the house. And then one of the kids notices the Ring video doorbell and they leave. And he says, "What are we leaving for?" And the guy points, "Watch, you think I got a Ring video doorbell? Get out of here." Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. It really, really works. All right, moving along. Let's talk about Surface. Who wants to take this one? Seems like a Paul Theriot story when I read the... Microsoft tried to make a case for Surface, but makes a case for Macs instead.
So Microsoft touted this survey that showed that Surface had a better reputation among individuals at companies than any other PC brand, and by far. Okay.
Yeah.
The problem is that Mac had a much better reputation than Surface, almost twice as good.
Oh, man.
And it basically kind of boiled down to, if your work would buy you a new computer and you didn't have to pay for it, which one would you choose? And this is a shocker, I know. They all picked the most expensive computers, Macs and Surfaces. So, you know, it's like if, hey, Leo, I'm gonna give you a free car. You can pick anything you want. You want a Toyota Corolla?
I want a Yugo. Yugo?
You can have, sure. You could have a Bentley. No, you want the Yugo? Okay.
Yeah, Yugo.
I appreciate what they're trying to do, I guess. Yeah. But I feel like Surface just came off a really bad year. We talked about that last week probably, or the week before. They need some good press. This is not it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I that day that this came out, I kind of joked about it on Twitter a little bit. And I said, I'm gonna not write about this. But by the way, hold on the chart for a second, because this is beautiful. Here's the other thing. This is all you need to know about the group. By the way, 1,300 people in the survey, so huge selection of humanity. you'll notice they list Sony as one of the brands that they would want to have purchased for them. Sony has not made PCs in 4 years. So Sony doesn't make PCs.
Sony's actually doing better in some cases than the Samsung. Or a lot better than Acer. Nobody wanted an Acer.
Yeah. You can buy an Acer. They don't want it. You can't buy a Sony, but they want that.
They want that. Lenovo.
That is amazing. Dell,
HP. And then Surface. Yeah. And then, by the way, like 50% better Apple.
Yeah, 50%. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah.
By the way, you would get this article if you subscribed, as I do, to Therat Premium. Just well worth it. Well worth it.
I'm going to go to Premium Plus, where I'm going to, you'll pay me to mine Bitcoin.
Somebody's doing that right now.
Yeah, I saw that.
Salon. Go to Salon. We talked about it yesterday on Security Now. If you go to Salon with an ad blocker on, it'll say, all right, you got two choices. You got an ad blocker, you could turn it off, or you can keep it on. But run this cryptocurrency mining.
Yeah, we're gonna run Bitcoin off, or mine for Bitcoin off of your computer. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Was it a joke though, or are they really doing that?
And really, security issues aside, and there may be some. I think it's interesting. It's not gonna peg your CPU. It's only while you're on the Salon site. They're probably not going to make very much money doing it, but if a million
experiment.
People...
Let me know if it works, because I am always looking for new ways to monetize.
Yeah, exactly. Let me know how that works out for you. All right, Xbox. Sorry, Mary Jo. You can take a nap. Go play with Sirachi.
I may weigh in here.
Okay, good.
You'll see.
First, she's watching the Olympics on TV. Now she wants to talk about the Xbox.
Are you watching the Olympics, Mary Jo, on the NBC app on your Xbox? Tell the truth.
I actually like the NBC app. It's actually a good way to watch. Seriously.
Yeah.
So I'll let Paul introduce the item before I weigh in.
Well, we know that Sony had sold, I think the figure was 76.5 million. PlayStation 4s through the end of last year.
Jiminy Christmas.
An incredible pace. They're about to outsell the previous generation console. And that console required, 7 or 8 years to reach that number. So really impressive. But questions remain about the Xbox and where does that kind of sit? And so an analyst estimated, sort of coincidental to this. Someone had written an article, I don't know if it was GameSpot or somebody, an estimated 30 to 50 million Xbox Ones have been sold. It's like 30 to 50 million. That's quite a range. Anyway, this other analyst has said that the figure is actually 35 million. And that would place Sony at, just north of 2-1 versus Xbox on the sales figure, which is kind of roughly what we had thought it was. There's some other good news from 35 million. They're in second place, but it's still a fairly solid second place. And I kind of compared this to how different smartphone platforms do, for example, from a market share perspective. I mean, Xbox is actually pretty respectable there. We know that the Xbox One X outsold the Sony PlayStation 4 Pro in the U.S. over the holidays, at least in the United States. But we also now know that the Xbox One X also outsold the PS4 Pro in the U.S. when you align the launches. Like, in other words, year over year, if you look at when the PS4 Pro launched a year ago versus Xbox One X this past year. Oh, and the other thing that I did, I tried to find the sales figures for the original, not the original, for the Xbox 360 to see where it was compared to its predecessor. I was actually really expecting it to be performing a lot better than its predecessor. But that is actually not the case. Where is this figure? So Microsoft announced sales figures for the Xbox 360 at different points. It was 30 million in mid-2009. It was 50 million in January 2011. So the same point in time for back then would be roughly February 2010. If you do like just an average between those two numbers, what you arrive at is 39 million units. And so the Xbox One X, Xbox One is a little bit behind its predecessor, but not horrible. And given how terrible the launch was, especially when a lot of Xbox fans actually kind of abandoned the platform, frankly, that's a lot better than I would have thought.
Yep. And
now,
what
Joe, what are your favorite Xbox
One games? What I wanted to say about all this is, you know what? We've talked about this. The thing Microsoft cares about, I mean, they care about games because games are one of the most used apps across all platforms. But they also care about the cloud and the gaming service and this thing they're building, supposedly, that's a game streaming service. So they, I mean, yeah, of course they care how many Xbox One consoles they sell, but it's not the main thing driving their strategic investment in games, right? That's not why they're staying in gaming.
Yes. And the thing that's interesting about that's true. Absolutely true. But what's interesting in some ways about that is if the Xbox One had gotten off to a tremendous start and was neck and neck or beating the PlayStation 4, it's possible that they wouldn't be where they are today with that strategy. Mm-hmm. And this is a goofy thing to say. I know this sounds like I'm making lemonade. I would make fun of someone else if they made this assertion. But I will just point out that in some ways, not winning this generation right up front has helped them make this transition for the future faster than they might have otherwise. And that people who are in the Xbox ecosystem are benefiting from this right now because they've done all these things that they might not, almost certainly never would have done otherwise. A lot of the stuff that makes Xbox special today, Xbox Game Pass, my dog barking, Xbox Play Anywhere, has happened more quickly, I think, or at all, only because the selling hardware has not worked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, you could make that, it's just like the case with Office, right? If Google hadn't done Office in the cloud, basically, I don't think Microsoft would have jumped to Office 365 and done as much as they did because of that, right? So,
by the way, that is an excellent example, and it's, you can actually see something in there too, because Microsoft has not gone full in on the cloud-based Office stuff like I think they should have. And I actually think the reason for that is because Google has not emerged as enough of a competitor today. You know, if Google had performed better, Google Docs or whatever we're calling that stuff, G Suite, whatever, if that stuff had performed better against Office 365, right? Yeah. I believe as of last year, it was 1/10 the revenue. If that was a little closer, I bet that Microsoft's cloud-based, not cloud-based, web-based in particular, and mobile maybe, Office apps would have been a lot more sophisticated by this point. But there's an example where they don't actually have to worry about it as much. Their current strategy is working fine.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of crazy gaming rumors, which we weren't, but
I'm listening.
I saw somebody.
The next Call of Duty, is that what you mean? Is that what you want to talk about? The next Call of Duty?
No. I forget who I saw say this, but somebody suggested the idea that what if, you know, this Andromeda hardware that Microsoft's building, dual screen courier type thing, what if one of the shells for it is a gaming shell or related to gaming and you could use it like a portable gaming player?
Okay, so I don't know anything about that, obviously, but in my...
That's how the Switch works. You can dock the Switch. Well, it's vice versa. It's a portable gaming player that you dock.
It might be in this very article we were just discussing about the Xbox One sales, but if it isn't, it was one of the ones very recently. The one thing I still think that's missing from Microsoft's strategy is mobile gaming, and that right now, Microsoft's mobile gaming strategy consists of you can play games on a laptop or a Surface device or whatever, and you can obviously that's sort of mobile. I think they need something in between. And one of the things that's really cool about the backward compatible technology that they've developed is that it works across platforms. You know, the Xbox One is an Intel platform, x86 platform. It can run Xbox 360 games, which are PowerPC. It can run original Xbox games. Mm-hmm. Those games are not terribly sophisticated compared to what's happening today in many cases, and could run on fairly low-end hardware. Like we've been talking about this Qualcomm stuff, for example, but it doesn't have to be Qualcomm. It could be whatever. Why couldn't a portable Xbox-branded gaming device run previous generation Xbox games on the go? I think a lot of those games would be perfectly viable today.
Yeah. Oh, I see who it was. I'm like, who said this? It was Colin Melia, you know, who we both follow, follow, who's an MVP. We were talking about Windows 10 S mode, and he said he was going through all the possible scenarios, and he said, what if there was one of these things running Windows 10 S mode and it could work like Xbox One in your pocket, like an Xbox One pocket device? Interesting thought.
It is a missing piece. I mean, the only thing I'd kind of add to this conversation is that Nintendo's the only company who makes a traditional console that's been successful in mobile. You know, Sony tried with various generations of the PSP, the I think it was called PS Vita and so forth, and they kind of never went anywhere and whatever. But, you know, I think the way that things are going in the future where the hardware doesn't matter as much anymore, plus they do have this virtualization/backward compatibility capability that's cross-platform, all of a sudden that stuff becomes pretty viable on the Microsoft side. It's possible.
Chris Wolfel, too, said he talked about Andromeda having this ability, and he said that's why I think they'll focus on Game Pass and Game Pass streaming for that. So that makes sense, too, right? If they do a streaming service, you could somehow use this small device for the platform for the streaming service. Makes sense. That doesn't mean they'll do it, but it's just it opens up that idea, you know, that maybe that's the future for this platform is Andromeda. Like, it's a future for everything, right?
So I'll just point out of course it is. We are pinning all our hopes on the next thing, as we always do. Andromeda as yet another way to take notes. Andromeda as yet another way to read things on the go. To me, doesn't make a ton of sense. There's nothing lacking in the current solutions that we have that kind of makes that thing necessary. Andromeda as a gaming machine, however, there's a little bit of light there, right? That is something that actually isn't necessarily great on existing platforms. I mean, you can do certain things with a touchscreen. Obviously, iPads have apps, and some of them are pretty sophisticated for sure. But I think when you tie it to that backward compatibility thing, you know, the difference in playing a shooter on a console versus playing a shooter like Modern Combat on an iPad is night and day. Not because the iPad can't handle it graphically or from a performance perspective. It's just that the control scheme is awkward, you know?
Yeah.
And I know you can get controllers for iPads. Sorry. whatever. But they're not really mainstream.
Yeah.
We can go right to the back of the book if you guys are done talking about gaming.
Well, Mary Jo really dragged that one out, and I just wanted to apologize to everybody.
I know. It's funny because in the show notes it says, Paul puts the item and then he puts discuss, and I was going to put, do we have to?
you took it literally.
Discuss. Was that supposed to be discussed, Mary Jo? Maybe.
A chickpea is neither a chick nor a pea. Discuss.
Let's start it off with Paul Thurrott and your tip of the week, sir. Very timely tip. This week.
Yeah, tomorrow Google is going to enable their cute little ad blocker in Chrome. And this may lead people to believe that they don't need ad blockers anymore. I think what you're going to discover is that you do, because Google's ad blocker is not completely useless. I mean, it's going to get rid of some of the most annoying ads that are available on the web for sure. And that's a good thing, but it's not a general purpose ad blocker, right? The company that derives literally 90-something percent of its revenues from ads is not going to block ads in their core product. They're just not. So they're working with the ad industry to make sure that you know, ads are not as intrusive, that people won't use ad blockers. In fact, the point of this ad blocker is literally to incite people not to use an ad blocker. So my advice to you is to use an ad blocker.
So, do you have one you like, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, I use one. I don't even think about it. So on Chrome, I use, where is it? I don't even see it.
I'll tell everybody what I use. uBlock Origin.
Oh, yeah. Everybody says that's good.
Yeah, that's the best one.
I find that to be a little severe, though, don't you?
Yeah, you can tune it down. You can, but it just, it has a lot of controls in it. One of the advantages of it is it will block those Bitcoin miners. It blocks a lot of malicious stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really a security tool as much as anything. That's why I use it. And then generally what I do, because after all, we're an ad-supported network, I'm sympathetic with websites that are ad-supported, is I disable it ad hoc. You know, so when I get to Salon's site, I disable it.
Yep.
And that's a very easy thing to do with the uBlock Origin extension. You drop it down, you press a button and say, you know, from
there
now on.
There are sites that literally block you from going to the site, and it's cool. I think it's important to kind of have this thing on generally, but I agree.
I'm wondering, you know, Google says they're going to block ads that don't follow the acceptable ad practice, which is what I think, isn't that what AdBlock Plus does, the acceptable ad practice?
Yeah.
I wonder if Chrome will be exactly the same as AdBlock Plus. They're using the same
database,
I believe. uBlock Origin is more aggressive.
If you're serious about wanting not to be overrun with auto-playing videos and yada 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 want to turn this thing.
Yeah.
All right. So this next tip is the most amazing thing in the world, and if you're sitting in front of a Windows computer, you got to try this right now, and you need to mess with everybody you know.
I'm doing
you
it right
type,
now.
Yep. Control plus Windows key plus C.
That's a lot of buttons. Control Windows key.
Hold down the
C.
Control and Windows key together, okay. And then hit C.
Yeah.
Your screen goes into monochrome mode.
Whoa, it turns high contrast, huh? It's pretty.
Yeah.
I like it.
So now what you're going to do is you're going to run around your office and do this to everyone's computer while they're at lunch. Because
that is
amazing.
Great. Let me just show everybody what that looks like. This is one of those Bing wallpapers, I think. Control, Windows key C. Now it's a beautiful black and white shot.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I could picture developers wanting to turn this on to get work done or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Actually, you know, we were recommending it a couple of weeks ago for your phone, your smartphone, making it less attractive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right? The New York Times.
Well, you don't have to work hard to make Windows less attractive. But
I like it. Control Windows key C. And then that's an accessibility feature, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep.
Amazing.
Nice.
Okay, so two app picks. I'll dispense with the lesser of the two immediately. Everybody knows that we've been waiting for iTunes to appear in the store. Still hasn't happened. We do know they're testing it. It is going to happen. But surprisingly, this week, Amazon Music showed up in the store. And this is interesting on a number of levels. First of all, it is a desktop bridge app. So it's the desktop app you would get from Amazon just in a container distributed through the store. But the reason this is cool is Amazon doesn't really make any store apps. There's an Amazon app that's just the website or whatever. But they don't have a Kindle app. Actually, I think they do have an Audible app. But there's a desktop Kindle app that's terrible. There is a cloud-based Kindle reader. I think it's called Cloud Reader. That's actually really nice. That thing as a PWA/store app would be kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And this gives me hope that Amazon is waking up to the store a little bit and maybe they'll start showing up because to date they haven't. And Amazon Music, for those people who don't know, you get certain things through your Prime. If you have a Prime subscription, they have a streaming music service that's very similar to Spotify or Apple Music that comes in individual and family accounts, are a little less expensive than those offerings. They used to have a service that allowed you to upload your existing music. So you'd rip CDs, whatever, you could put it up into the cloud. They actually canceled that. In fact, I think that's going offline like tomorrow or something, or this week sometime. But people already did that, I believe, can still access that music going forward if they keep paying for that service. This app, the new Amazon app, will play music that's local. And it will play whatever you get through the cloud. So if you subscribe to anything like Prime, you get some radio, like Pandora-style radio stations. If you pay for whatever I think it's called Music Unlimited service.
Yeah, because I do, because I have a, you know, on your Echo, a lot of people who have Echoes use Music Unlimited.
Yeah, and actually, so I should point out they have an even cheaper version of Music Unlimited for Echo owners. So if you
yeah,
don't mind just playing
one Echo.
Yeah, if you don't mind, right? But a lot of people only have one, so if they want, it's a cheap way to get it.
Yeah.
So the other one is Mehdi Hassan works with us at Throt.com, and he writes news every day. He's amazing. And I had kind of forgotten this because but he's a developer as well. And he creates an app called Tweetin.
He wrote Tweetin?
Yes.
You've been recommending Tweetin forever.
He sort of mentioned to me the other day, he's like, hey, I released this update or whatever. Tweetin. And I was like, wait a minute, you released this update? I was like, what are you talking about?
You didn't
about?
Know?
And if you go and look at it. So the thing that's amazing about this to me, aside from the fact that it exists at all, is that it's awesome looking. It's a beautiful app. It in many ways is the spiritual successor to MetroTwit, right?
The
Long Zhang and Company thing. He has versions that work on the Windows desktop that come through the store, Mac OS, and also integrated through extensions, I guess, into Chrome and Firefox as well, if that's how you want to do it. So check this out. It's amazing. So if you can find it at tweetinapp, all one word, .com.
It's been our preferred Twitter app on Windows for some time.
Oh, you're going to have to start paying royalties then because
I had no idea he was working at Therot.com. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah.
You didn't know either. That's hysterical.
I know he worked at Therot.com.
Yeah, no, but recommended Tweetin. You're the one who told me about
I'm not completely out to lunch, Leo.
Yeah. Who's this guy and what's he doing here?
Who's posting my site?
Wow, that's awesome, though. That's fantastic.
Right. Okay. Yeah, amazing.
Mary Jo Foley, let's do some enterprise picks of the week here. What about that?
Yeah. So this doesn't sound like an enterprise pick, but there is an enterprise angle to it. Today, Microsoft announced something called Microsoft for Startups. And this is a program that is something they launched to try to get more startups to use Azure. So they're setting aside $500 million. They're going to give developers credits, all kinds of new tools and resources. And the reason I made it the enterprise pick is a big part of why they're doing this is to help startups get ready to sell to the enterprise. So if you are working in a startup that has an enterprise product or service or wants to build one, you should definitely check out this new program. There's a good chance that you could get some funding through it from Microsoft and some Azure credits too. Launched today, Microsoft for Startups.
Nice. And your code name of the week.
Yeah, since we talked at the beginning of the show a lot about Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection, I had forgotten until I started looking up some of my older articles about this that the code name for that was Seville. So I went back to the code name vault and said, when did we know this was Seville? We knew in 2016. Actually, that was the codename. I remember hearing Seville, and I'm like, what is that thing? What is that thing? And it turned out to be the threat protection service that they built into Windows 10. Now, why they called that Seville, I don't know. They use a lot of geographic codenames at Microsoft, so it could just be that. Or maybe it's because it's famous for flamenco dancing.
Oh, or lace.
Or lace. I know. I'm like looking at the listing. I'm like, what here connects back with ATP? Nothing.
Nothing.
Anyway, the code name was Seville, which just like a blast from the past kind of thing.
I think we need a Valentine's Day beer.
I do too.
Yeah. Is there anything
after
like
my,
that?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, okay, there must be some beers where chocolate is the main theme. And of course there are. And one of the best ones is from a brewery in San Diego called The Brewery. They make a beer called White Chocolate. Tastes exactly like white chocolate. I don't know how they do it. There's no white chocolate in it. It's a barley wine type of a beer, a mere 16.6% ABV, very light, not really. it's used. It's aged in white oak barrels, I believe. So white oak sap aged in used bourbon barrels, giving you a coconut, honey, caramel, vanilla flavor. If you can find a bottle of this and you don't have a Valentine's present yet, this would make a very nice one, I would suggest. The brewery.
Happy Valentine's
I was going to break my diet.
Yeah.
You might want to try that.
Go all the way.
It would be a barley wine.
Beer and chocolate.
Yeah.
And barley wine.
If you could just convince me that dark chocolate was somehow involved, I would trick myself into thinking there was some small benefit to it.
Yeah, it's good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vanilla notes, cocoa powder, and a woody bourbon barrel to boot.
Very nice beer.
On Twitter, they ask, can you ask Paul Theriot if it was memorable for him starring on Mixer at CES 2018, watching PUBG with Chudan TV in the Microsoft Experience Center? It made our day, says Microsoft Gareth.
Let me explain to you what I witnessed. And it was a guy hiding behind a tree, hoping to be the last guy standing in PUBG.
Yeah.
And then we came and interrupted him, and someone walked up and shot him in the head.
Now that makes my day.
Wow. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Take that, you lurker. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our broadcast day. We hope you have had a good time watching and listening to Windows Weekly and encourage you to come back again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, when Paul Theriot from Theriot.com and Mary Jo Foley from AllAboutMicrosoft.com will once again enter the ring, don the gloves, and battle it out to be number one Windows Weekly contender.
I don't know why you've reminded me of this, but it sounds like the guy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Like you're describing, like, next week, the gang next will, week. You know, whatever.
Do watch
I
live.
I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you damn kids.
As Paul removes the rubber mask, hiding the evil villain.
Oh, it was Mr. Smith all along. I'm watching the old roller coaster.
Twit.tv/live for the live stream. The chat room is irc.twit.tv. And you can also watch on demand, as with all our shows. In this case, twit.tv/ww for Windows Weekly. We also invite you to subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, whatever that might be. That way you'll get every episode the minute it's available. Paul, Mary Jo, thank you so much. Goodbye.
Daisy, thank you, too.
Daisy, goodbye, Sriracha. Yep. Goodbye from the whole family. Good night, John Boy. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.